We were discussing Munisutta, and I'm going to share the screen. So as we know already, Munisutta is available in the Sutta Nipata, where very interesting suttas are collected, like Karanimitta Sutta, Ratana Sutta, Mangala Sutta. All these very interesting and fairly profound suttas are collected in this Sutta Nipata, which is one of the Kuddaka Nikaya books. And here in this particular sutta, the theme is, we can say, a life of the Buddha or life of an Arahant, and we can say it's a kind of an exemplary life. It is the utmost level of the saint which is explained in this sutta. And therefore, as the followers of the Buddha, so we have some kind of an inclination towards this Muni, the saint, kind of person who is fully dedicated himself to a spiritual life and who is well accomplished and has been, say, as the Buddha, for example, being a teacher, as a good example, and again, as a teacher. And as a follower, I am ready to further follow him, further takes a kind of an example, learn from him. So that's why these kind of suttas are fairly inspiring to develop the faith, to develop the confidence, and to understand what are the exemplary features or the qualities which are available in that saint. Now, today we are going to discuss the next verse, which also explain certain sublime qualities, very interesting qualities, actually here about the Buddha. Ekam charantam munin appamattam minda pasansasu avedamanam sihangva saddesu asanta santam vattam vatangva jalamhi asajjamanam padumangva toyena alippamanam netara manye samananya neyam tangvapi dhira munin vedayanti. Now, as you know, in the most of the suttas of the Sutta Nipata, a very profound teaching is explained through a very concise, interesting verse. So that is the beauty. In a way, we can say that is the talent of the Buddha. How a profound teaching is explained with a concise way, where everything is included in a beautiful verse. Here also, very interesting and very profound qualities are embedded in this particular verse. Ekam charantam. Now here, idea is one who is living alone. Now you know that Buddha, as the teacher, had many followers, maybe lay followers and monks, nuns. So many people are there who is following the Buddha. But he sometimes has a great example. He live alone and he go to a forest dwelling and he tell that you please don't come to meet me. I want to maintain seclusion. So sometimes he simply go on Pindapatha alone without having another second monk, attending monk. And even when he is associating people, or even when he is preaching, even when he is, say, we call that teaching Dhamma at the Jetavanarama, for example. His mind has maintained that seclusion. His mind has maintained that serenity. His mind has maintained that emptiness. So that's the beauty. So here, Ekan Charantan doesn't merely mean that he is living alone, so that the body is alone. And he has gone to a place where no one is there. But the deeper meaning is more than that. It is not the bodily seclusion. More than that, maybe his mind is secluded. Mind is not affected by defilements. Mind has its own seclusion. Mind has its own independence. So, because his mind is completely free from defilements. So, when mind is free from defilements, we can say, okay, even when he is with others, with the crowd, still he is, his mind is alone. His mind is secluded. His mind is enjoying kind of a solitude. Ekan charantam, munin appamattam, and he is heedful. So the Buddha and the Arahant, even though they are fully attained, fully enlightened, they don't spend time neglectfully, wasting time. Rather, they may be doing something something useful, maybe teaching or maybe giving an example or whatever it is. And till that also, if we consider a noble person, starting from a Sotapanna, then Sakadagami, Anagami, now they are the real, we can say, the warriors. They are the real people who are going towards the full attainment, full enlightenment, and they are not heedless. They are heedful. They are not wasting time, even though they have a lot of other commitments. So they do not neglect their practice. So this is very, very interesting, because we as a practitioner, we as a follower of the Buddha, who is trying to practice as much as possible, need to understand. So sometimes there may be various other opportunities, various other obligations, duties. So while we are doing those, how well or how quickly we can return back to the practice? Or while we are engaged with those other activities, is it possible for me to maintain some amount of mindfulness without allowing the mind to wander and fairly deluded by various thoughts? How about maintaining a mind which is quite mindful, fully aware about the full situation, and free from defilements? If it is possible, it's great. That means it is not only that we are practicing while at the cushion or while at the walking path, but while we are engaged with various other activities, there also we are trying to maintain our practice, to establish mindfulness, to watch the mind, how mind is reacting. So if there are any defilements, what are the defilements available in the mind? So likewise, it's a kind of an ongoing practice. So as a result of that, we can say he is a heedful person. He haven't neglected the practice. He is not ignorant about the practice or ignoring the practice, neglecting the practice. Rather, he always keep an eye about the practice. He always keep an eye about his own mind. So therefore, that is very, very important, because sometimes when we are so absorbed to certain activities, we lose ourselves. We forget ourselves. And we completely forget our practice. So therefore, it is quite necessary to keep an eye about the mind, and at least then we know, okay, I am doing well, I am fully aware of the situation, my mind is maybe going through a little bit of tension, my mind is going through a little bit of stress, my mind is going through a little bit of defilements, but I am fully aware. That is much safer than completely being ignorant or completely being negligent. So here, appamattam indicates that heedfulness. Ninda pasansasu avedamana. Now this is very interesting, where Buddha mentioned, not swayed by blame and praise. Because blame and praise is two sides that we are constantly experiencing. We can't say constantly we are expecting praise, or constantly we are experiencing praise, but time to time there may be ups and downs, there may be blames, there may be criticisms, there may be certain condemnations. So while we are going through that, are we capable of maintaining equanimity? Because we can't expect praise every day. We can't expect everyone to appreciate us. We can't expect everyone to respect us. Everyone to agree with us. There may be situations people are criticizing us. There may be situations people are disagreeing with us, condemning us, belittling us. So all these difficulties are there. So here, Ninda Pasansasu Avedamana. So that means he is not swayed by these praise and blame. Sihangva saddesu asanta santa. Now here, further explanation is given about the other ups and downs of the life or vicissitudes of the life. Our previous one is particularly emphasized about the praise and blame, but giving a simile of the lion whose feature is kind of firmness, steadiness. Even when there are various difficulties, so he is not alarmed. He is steady. He is strong. His mind is quite stable. And here, very interesting, like a lion not alarmed among hounds. Probably you might have heard about the famous story that a little hare, a rabbit, hearing a sound of the fruit falling onto a palmyra leaf and then palm leaf, and he got suddenly wake up and he thought, okay, the whole sky is falling. And now he start running, being afraid of that sound. And then other animals are also joining with him, maybe bears, maybe ultimately even elephants. They all are frightened. They are all now running away, thinking that something is going to happen. He is quite afraid of the sound, started from the sound. But later, once they meet the lion, the king of the animals, so they stop. And now lion is going to the source and he is finding out, okay, there is nothing to be afraid. He has just a fruit fallen onto a palm leaf. Nothing to be afraid. So in that little story, it indicates how Yoniso Manasikara, the lion has, how intelligent it is. So this actually we can take it as a kind of an example story where the Muni, the saint, is someone who is not alarmed of these ups and downs of the life. So sometimes we are always looking forward for a praise, always looking forward for a gain, always looking forward for a success or fame. But unfortunately, we don't know, we never know that when the opposite going to happen. Maybe a blame, maybe a loss, maybe a suffering, or maybe ill fame. All these things are possible. So that is the life. And that interestingly, Buddha himself has faced all this. So he has given a very exemplary life by going through all this. So that's the interesting part. So he is not merely talking this. He is not merely preaching this. But he himself has gone through all these difficult situations. If you can remember, while Buddha was preaching among the crowd, how Chinchimanavika came in front and accused the Buddha, telling that he is an abuser. He has, raped me. So you can imagine the situation. Now Buddha was in a respectful situation and everybody was listening to Dhamma. He is preaching and this woman is approaching him and all of a sudden showing herself and telling, okay, you are the father of this son or this baby. Accusing. And there are other situations like, say, while Buddha is going through village Pindapat. There are situations where Mara takes certain events where people are not offering dana, not offering alms, and they instead start cheating, start ill-treating. And all these situations are also has happened. And sometimes even the Buddha's uncle, we can say the Super Buddha, the King Super Buddha. So what happened was, he came in front of the Buddha, he was stopping him going forward and blaming, using the harsh words. And that is how it went through. It's quite difficult. And sometimes even when Venerable Devadatta, when he was making a schism among the monks. So Buddha is the one who is teaching, Buddha is the one who is the great teacher, and monks are there to follow him, to learn from him. But ultimately, Devadatta was able to somehow turn their minds, change their minds, and make a schism, kind of a division among the Sangha. And you can understand how Buddha handled it, how carefully Buddha handled that. That's also a very interesting situation. And likewise, there are very, very interesting hardships that Buddha has gone through. And even when Buddha was in the Veranja, another area where Buddha had to only depend on the horse food. There were no other nutrition food available. Rather, he simply had to maintain himself and the Sangha using horse food. But he calmly, carefully, patiently endured that. So likewise, there are very extreme situations even how Buddha handled all these ups and downs, vicissitudes of the life, like a lion who is not afraid of sounds. Vātamva jālanghi asajjamānam. Now, actually, this verse has so many similes. The first one is telling sihamva saddesu asantamānam. So, like a lion not being afraid of sounds. Now, we have another simile. Vātamva jālanghi asajjamānam. Now, that means we are like a net which can't catch wind. A net can't catch the wind because net has so many holes. You can't catch or collect the wind or air using a net. So the idea is, so the mind of the Buddha, mind of the Muni, is not being trapped by various views and cravings. So various nets of craving and views are not being capable of catching the wind, catching the mind of the saint, mind of the Muni, mind of the Buddha. So the cravings and the views are like a net, but the wind is something like the Buddha's mind or the Arahant's mind, which has so much of subtle nature, which is not being capable of included or influenced by various craving and various views. So there are various times that sometimes people are coming and trying to enforce their views, enforce various situations, or enforce various desires. And sometimes they come and challenge. If you can remember, while certain nuns, Arahant nuns, while they are dwelling in certain forests, sometimes Mara approach them and trying to tempt them. And at that time, actually, those Arahant nuns, they actually were capable of overcoming the Mara and challenge him. And their minds were not being able to tempt by the Mara, not being able to confuse by the Mara. Mara was asking various questions, expecting that this nun can become bewildered, can become confused, but they are not. So you can see kind of a strength is there, kind of a bravery is there, when various wrong views are approaching, when people are trying to enforce them, when people are trying to tempt them, still they are capable of maintaining their stability, maintaining their clarity. Vātamha jālamhi asajjamāna. Then padumamma toyena alippamāna. Now there's another simile where if we consider paduma, here means a lotus. That lotus is not spoiled or tainted by water. You know that the bud of the lotus is actually at the below the water surface, and later it may blossom coming out of the water, and now it is blossomed and spreading the fragrance, but there are no water available. Even when rain happens, even when the water drips happen, but nothing remains. Everything just go away. It is not polluted. It is not absorbed by the water, rather the purity, the clarity is retained. So that is the mind represented by the Buddha and the Arahants, that the cravings and the various other desires and views are very much like adhesives, glues, attachments happen to the mind, but these Arahants, these Munis, these saints, the Buddhas, is completely free from that. They are like a lotus, maintaining the purity of the mind without being affected by various desires, without being affected by various cravings, without being affected by various wrong views. You can see how stable their mind is. And then another point highlighted interesting here, netara anye samananya neyam. So he is a neta, so that means he is the teacher. Neta means the beginner, the one who has found the path. Now particularly this is referring to the Sammasambuddha. And netara anye samananya neyam. Now, but he is not led by the crowd. He was not taught by another person, but he himself has become self-enlightened. Now that is the feature of the Sammasambuddha. Now all the others, say except the Paccheka Buddha, Arahants and the other nobles, they all have to get some kind of help, some kind of guidance from the teaching of a Sammasambuddha. But the Sammasambuddha himself is not taking any guidance from anywhere, rather he is capable of realizing the Dhamma by himself. So that is a leader of others, not by others led. So others can't simply say cheat the Buddha, or others can't simply lead the Buddha, others can't simply affect the Buddha. But Buddha maintaining his clarity, maintaining his stability, maintaining the firmness of the mind, and he is the one who is teaching, he is the one preaching, he is the one interestingly explain the Dhamma. So we can see, I mean, as a teacher, the role of the Buddha, a profound role of the Buddha, as a teacher, as a person who has self-enlightened, who has gone through a lot of hardships, and learn from situations and teaching the Dhamma, and he has gone through a lot of difficulties, I mean before even being the Buddha, as a Buddha to be, how many lifetimes he has practiced and tried to develop certain skillful qualities, spiritual qualities, and was able to become enlightened as the Buddha in the last life. You can see what a kind of exemplary life that he has shown us. What a role model he has shown us. So always actually, therefore, having that faith, having that trust, having that deeper gratitude is very, very interesting, because that makes us actually more like innocent. Rather than we think, okay, I know, rather than we think that, okay, I am accomplished, the attitude we need to have is, I am just a student. I am a follower of the Buddha. Buddha is the teacher. I am just a student. So such kind of an innocent attitude, kind of a humility having with us, help us to further grow or blossom in this spiritual path. Rather than being having a kind of a stiff mind, arrogant mind, or conceited mind. So how to become a kind of a innocent person who is still having a deeper understanding and following the Buddha and always maintaining a gratitude towards the Buddha, knowing that Buddha is the supreme teacher, knowing that Buddha is the self-enlightened person, knowing that he is the teacher who has shown the path, a noble path. And here, further, the last one, Tangvapi Dheda Munin Vedayanti. Now these sublime qualities are representing the Buddha. These sublime qualities are representing the saint, the Muni. So you can see how deeply that Buddha has touched the qualities of the Buddha. Actually, today we discuss only certain qualities, and you can imagine each and every verse representing very profound, very interesting, deep qualities of the Buddha or Arahant or a saint, a Muni, giving us a very interesting perspective. Where the teacher is moving, where the teacher is taking our attention, where he is directing us. What is the direction that we need to maintain? What is the direction that we need to move? Where our practice has to lead? So those spiritual qualities are really highlighted here. And it is not that the outer appearance, it is not that the simply the fame or the luxuries or various marvels or kind of unbelievable things. Here, Buddha is talking about very concrete supreme qualities. Now, these concrete supreme qualities are practiced. He actually earned them through a lot of practice. And he is giving a role model with those concrete qualities, beautiful qualities. And he being the teacher that we are following, then we become really confident. Okay, he's the teacher. He knows the path. He practices it to the best. He has given a great example. He has shown the path. Many others have followed that. So let me also try to do it. Let me also practice it. Let me also have an appreciation to that path. Let me also have an innocent gratitude towards the Buddha. So that really helps to having a kind of a conducive mindset for our spiritual development. Okay, with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Masara Bhante.
Yeah.
Today we have 5 questions. First question is a general question. Dear Bhante, last time you have answered a question related to a 4 noble truths and highlighted that the first one, Dukkha Satya, is far reaching than we understand from the mind workings perspective. Bhante mentioned that there can be 3 broad categories of suffering, Dukkha Dukkha, Viparinama Dukkha and Sankhara Dukkha. Also, the mind-related Sankhara Dukkha can be completely eradicated by following the Dhamma path. Appreciate if Bhante can further explain this Kodhamma. Also, does that mean we can only get rid of one-third of Dukkha in the Dhamma path with Metta? That is the end of the question.
Yeah, interesting section. So basically, it doesn't mean that we are trying to look down the Dhamma or showing that it is incapable of overcoming all the Dukkha. But the majority of the Dukkha is depending on that mind-made path or the self-created suffering. So as I explained last time, the suffering actually can be divided into 3 groups. Dukkha Dukkha, Viparinama Dukkha and Sankhara Dukkha. Dukkha Dukkha is the most evident one, where we go through certain difficulties, physical ailments, diseases, say various calamities happening because of the environment. Likewise, there are unavoidable amount of physical suffering that sometimes that we have to go through. Suppose there's a snake bite. It may be producing a lot of pain. There may be, say, earthquake. It may be producing a lot of stress. It may be producing a lot of difficulties. It may be producing, maybe if we underwent that, say it has given us a lot of suffering. Now, these are obvious ones. And probably we can't say, I mean, if there were kind of a karma that we probably have done in the past, if they are as a fruit of that, if we have to go through this suffering, so this is unavoidable. You may try your best, but still, if it is a karma you have to go through, then it is unavoidable. And then the Viparinama Dukkha. So we maintain a conditioned body. So this body is not a permanent body. Definitely it will go through aging process, decaying process. So it becomes more and more weaker. feeble. So this is, I mean, you can't stop that. So how are you going to stop the weakening body? How are you going to stop the aging body? So Dhamma is not for you to stop the aging process. But on the other hand, Dhamma take a different perspective to stop this whole thing and to be free from the whole samsara. So therefore, at that level we can say, yes, we are even overcoming these two types of suffering. We are going through these two types of suffering, the aging, the decaying, and going through the physical suffering, ailments, difficulties, diseases, calamities, this and that, so much of suffering, either dukkha dukkha or viparinama dukkha, because we are born to this world. Now, probably we can say, okay, if you are, as a result of the Dhamma, say you are going to a heavenly realm, then probably you don't experience all these types of suffering, because temporary, a fair amount of happiness is there, a freedom from suffering is there. But still there's a potential possibility, again you may coming back to the human realm. Human realm is full of suffering. Fair amount of suffering is available there, it is unavoidable. But how about completely be free from the samsara? So if one is capable of completely be free from samsara, so that will eliminate all three types of suffering. That is one thing that we need to remember. And on the other hand, while living, we can completely overcome the third type of suffering. So that is the sankhara dukkha. So the majority of the dukkha that we experience is because of that. The physical suffering we can bear if we don't have sankhara dukkha. The viparinama dukkha we can bear if we don't have sankhara dukkha. Because we accept that. We accept, we admit, yes, it is unavoidable. And we have a kind of a maturity, we have a kind of a patience, endurance to overcome all those kind of viparinama dukkha and dukkha dukkha. But the key thing is the sankhara dukkha. So why we create suffering? Why we do all these fabrications? Why we do all these formations? So that is the delusion, that is the ignorance that we have. Avijja paccaya sankhara. Sankhara paccaya vijnana nama rupa. So ultimately end up with so much of suffering. Now this sankhara dukkha is something that we can totally overcome through the practice. So therefore, that is even in this very life, that is the Buddha's say promise, we can say, that it is possible. So therefore, within this life, we can completely come to a stop of the sankhara dukkha. And while being fully enlightened, one can be completely free from the samsara, so that the other two types of suffering are no more. Back to you.
Second question out of five. Dear Bhante, I try to practice walking mindfulness whenever I get a chance, at least 1 hour a day. It is progressing slowly, but due to the continuous practice, I can establish mindfulness within 5 to 10 rounds. I start focusing the lower part of my body and try to identify the observations on the soul, such as the pressure distribution, hot and cold nature, rough and smooth nature of the touch, etc. I can identify the differences between the left and right foot. After some time, I start focusing on the walking process as well, the movement of the feet, how moving forward happens, bending of the knees, etc. This started happening recently. The focus goes up along the body, on how legs move, hips move. The backbone is moving, arms and even the neck and the head. Sometimes I feel the body's skin as a whole air currents touching the hands, warm and cold patches, etc. Since my intention is walking practice, now I am worried that my technique has gone wrong. Much merits for Bhante's advice with metta. That is the end of the question.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the full perspective, looking at the big picture, overview of the whole thing is also sometimes helpful. But giving more emphasis on the lower part of the legs may have some advantage because you know that the mind is being trained to quickly aim at different places and constantly sort of have the concentration there and to investigate what's really going on. So that's where the wisdom is growing. But it doesn't mean that the other sensations available to your body, the head, the everywhere, not contributing to the wisdom. They too are contributing to the wisdom. And that you can do actually while sitting. I mean, because if you say consider the various sensations available on your head, for example. So you can actually observe that even while sitting, while walking, while standing, lying down. Because now we are at the level of the Dhatu Manasikara, the elements meditation. So there is no specific posture to do that. But the advantage while we are doing walking meditation is to train the mind from a different skill set. In that skill set, one important thing is how quickly that we can locate our mind, position our mind at different places. So that gives us kind of a command to the mind. So rather than being driven by the mind, now we have kind of a capacity to drive the mind. Now we know exactly where the mind has to focus and we drive the mind. So that skill being developed while we are walking. So therefore, time to time doesn't matter. You can have an overview of the whole thing and later slowly take your attention more towards the lower part of your legs, understanding various subtle sensations and trying to understand, try to comprehend them, and that will be further helpful.
Yeah. Third question out of five. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, last time you explained about the verse Sankappa Rago Purusassa Kamo and mentioned that the wise people do not dwell on these mental formation due to various attractions around them. Before this explanation, I was thinking there is no such absolute attraction in this world, but they are just mental fabrications, or the world is naturally inherent and natural, neutral. Looks like Panthe's explanation is that there are things which are not inherent or neutral in this world, irrespective of whether we create mental fabrication or not. Maybe the way I understood is wrong. Appreciate Panthe's insights. Metta, that is the end of the question.
I think actually we can accept, I mean, there may be beautiful things, there may be ugly things, there may be neutral things. Actually, we don't need to even deny that. And people are sort of seeing their beauty and people are appreciating their beauty. And we don't need to even go and challenge that. But the point is where the desire is arising. So there may be beautiful things, doesn't matter. But why desire is arising in my mind? How the desire is arising in my mind? And that beautiful thing when I see, for example. So why, how my mind is reacting? How my mind started kind of a fabrication? So that is where I have to restrain it. So that is why that is what Buddha emphasized in that verse. Tithani tithanti chitrani tateva loke atitta dhira vinayanti chanda. So the wise person simply allow things to be. He don't go and disturb them. He don't go and try to change them. Rather he atitta dhira vinayanti chanda. So he start restraining his desires. He understand the desires, how the fabrications happen, how the fantasies happen, how internally we do all these fantasies. So that helps to overcome the problem. So that is what I try to emphasize.
Fourth question out of five. This is also a general question. Dear Bhante, related to the last question, I have heard this sometimes back. If a tree falls in a hidden world where nobody is looking or listening, did it really happen? The answer yes means things happen irrespective of us or consciousness being part of it. And if it is no, that means the world is not physical as we know it, but created by intertwining of consciousness. What is Bhante's understanding? Apology if this question is unnecessary and I am at Bhante's disposal with metta. That is the end of the question.
Yeah. So I think you are asking something related to the quantum physics. I'm not much familiar with it. I heard about something that they are talking about the split theory or something like that. Split hole theory something. The point anyway is what I like to refer here is where Buddha talks about the emptiness. In the very interesting sutta called Kalakarama Sutta. So in the Kalakarama Sutta, Buddha interestingly mentioned, apart from seeing, there is nothing that we are seeing as a something. So we do kind of an objectification. But Buddha say that apart from seeing, the activity seeing, there is nothing as a thing that we see. So that is one area. Another thing is that he say, so he is not conceiving, thinking that he hasn't seen. Similarly, he mentioned, he is not conceiving, thinking that there is something which is really worthy of seeing. And again, he is mentioning, he is not conceiving, thinking that there is a person who is seeing. And these are very, very interesting four areas that we can refer in this context. So, actually, very interestingly mentioned in this Kalakarama Sutta. Let me give you the Pali phrase. Datta dattabham dittham na manyati. So that means, apart from the seeing, Buddha say, I mean, there is no object, there is no thing as such that we are seeing. And then, adittham na manyati. So that means, we sometimes say, okay, I couldn't see it, I should have seen it, it's really worthy of seeing it. So we are now conceiving, thinking what we haven't seen. So there, Buddha mentioned, okay, there is no such thing. I mean, you don't need to have such kind of a conceiving, thinking about the what is not seen. And then, tattabbanna manyati. So, thinking that I have seen something, again you are conceiving. So, it is not necessary to think like that either. And the last one is dattaranna manyati. That means, the person who is seeing, there is no such person. You don't need to think that I am a person who is seeing. I am a person going through this experience. I as an individual, a being, there is no such thing. So therefore these four attributes, these four ways of logics or statements give us a very interesting dimension to the emptiness. So there may be various processes going on. And apart from that, there are no solid entities, there are no solid objects which are permanent, which are real or which are solid. And all are very much like a flux in that sense. Hope I think I give you a little bit of a closer answer, but not immediately addressing to your, say, quantum physics related question, but giving some kind of a idea according to the Buddha's teaching.
This is the last question, Bhante.
Yeah.
Dear Bhante, my family recently lost our pet dog of 15 years. He was very sick towards the end and I know that his physical suffering is over. However, now my family is mentally suffering and sad for losing our dear pet who was like a family member. I am also upset. but try to support and remember the good times and memories without it. It is hard. How can we use this Muni Sutta and other Buddhist techniques to better understand death and cope with grief, with metta? That is the end of the question.
Yeah, very interesting. Actually, today itself we discuss about that. So we all have to go through these ups and downs of the life. It is unavoidable. Vicissitudes of the life. One side is gain, the other side is loss. One side is fame, other side is ill fame. One side is praise, other side is blame. One side is, say, happiness, the other side is suffering. So we all have to go through it. So that is where the example that Buddha has given. It's not that always he is gaining and going to a lot of praises and profits or gains, happiness. But sometimes he have to go through a lot of hardships. He lost Venerable Sariputta before he is passing away. And he lost Venerable Moggallana before he passed away. He lost even Venerable Rahula before he passed away. He lost King Suddhodana, Venerable Yasodhara, Utpalavanna, all these most, say, prominent arahants. Actually, while Buddha was living, he lost. And even you can remember how Prajapati Gotami, she being again an arahant, and being like a second mother to him. She too actually has passed away, and she is coming and telling the Buddha how Buddha was helpful to her, and how actually as a child she protected the Buddha, the Prince Siddhartha. And ultimately she takes the, say, leave, and she go and pass away. Now all these, I mean, in one point we can say, so these are all losses in that sense. These are all kind of areas that Buddha went through, that the prominent figures, the pillars like in the Buddha Sasana, they are all are collapsed before Buddha passed away. And he mentioned actually when Venerable Sariputta passed away, Venerable Mahamoggallana passed away, he says that it is like two huge branches of this whole Buddha Sasana are now collapsed. But Tathagata, as the Buddha, I am firm. My mind is unwavering. How can I expect any kind of permanence in this, the sankhara, in this conditioned world? So that is the deep understanding that Buddha is showing us. And on the other hand, I can point out that Buddha promised, if one is practicing Satipatthana, so we can bear all this. We can understand, okay, there is a deeper support coming through the insights. Because we ourselves have seen how impermanent these conditioned things are. These sankharas are how impermanent, how transient. How can they give us lasting happiness? And they are beyond our control. And these truths or these insights, when we know by ourselves, when we experience them by ourselves, then all these demise, all these losses, we can bear. That is why Buddha mentioned in the Satipatthana Sutta, Dukkha Domanassanam Atthangamaya, Soka Pariddhavanam Samatikkamaya, Soka Pariddhavanam Samatikkamaya, sorrow, lamentation, all these things we can overcome. Dukkha Domanassanam Atthangamaya, suffering, despair, that also can be abandoned. Because now you have a kind of a refuge, now you have a kind of a deeper understanding, a wisdom is available. So that wisdom helps you to maintain the stability of the mind. So therefore, I invite you to further practice the Satipatthana. Definitely, it will help you to have a less disturbed mind. And even when you go through certain difficulties, you can quickly revert back to the evenness of the mind.
Yeah, that was the last question, Bhante. We don't have much more time to continue to the audience. So we come to the end of the program. I would first like to thank Bhante for his valuable time. Also, we would like to pass our merits to everyone, both seen and unseen, who are enabling this program. And we pass our merits to all participants for joining the program. With that, I would like to conclude the program today. Teruvan Saranai, Sadhu, Sadhu, Sadhu.
Teruvan Saranai.